Dear Blood Room Radio audience, that probably should be the national anthem for Blood River Radio, that and Dixie. In some ways, I think I like that one better. My God, our double first cousins, those Germans, especially the Luftwaffe, the Wehrmacht, and who could ever not love the Waffen SS? My God, our beloved Adolf Hitler. Anyway, people, I guess I'm getting carried away. I consider him the greatest white man that's lived in 100 years or so. Anyway, people, you're right back. We're bringing on the bitter ender, Gene Andrews. Sister Monica, Sister Braveheart, is still with us. So I'm going to be kind of bringing them in out of the breaks, and they're going to carry on this third hour. I pretty much got my stuff done the first hour and some in the second hour. So we have the historical expert himself, summa cum laude. So how you doing, bitter ender?
I'm not the bitter ender here, Eddie, but I really don't have the knowledge and expertise and whatnot on the topics that Gene is going to be covering, and unless he's covering some other topics, so I might bow out soon, but first of all, well, I'll wait till he gets on and greet him and all that, because I'm not sure if he's right there. But just wanted to say that. Then I'll probably make my exit after that.
I'm not. Hey, Bitter, how you doing, brother?
Hey, Eddie, how are you doing?
We're doing pretty good. We got you a little late. We were just talking about Sister Monica's here with us, but
great.
Yeah.
Hi, Gene.
Hello.
I hope you can go back and listen to the archives that first hour. We had a lady on, her name was Annie Elizabeth McKinney. McKinney. She was from Turning Point USA. And just in case some people might be listening and might be tuning in right now, she's the one that brought that Kyle Rittenhouse to the University of Memphis campus last Wednesday, Gene. I went out there to cover it.
Yeah.
They wouldn't let me in. I had tickets. They canceled my ticket. I had my press credentials, my all dressed up.
They had to get more of the BLMs in there. They don't have room for us.
Sure as hell didn't. But anyway, I hope you can listen to her. Go back to the archives. Yep. She was very, very impressive. She really was a weird Christian lady. But anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there for you. And so what are we going to talk about tonight, Bitter Ender?
Well, Nancy said she had a lot of information on the Confederate generals that were killed at Franklin. Wanted to have that. And then I had a couple other things on March that I didn't get in last week, so I thought I'd catch up on that.
Well, Miss Nancy's not going to be in for the rest of the hour, it doesn't look like. So
take
off. Yeah, take off and go ahead. And lead us anywhere you want to go, because I know it's always not only is it interesting, it's just educational, right, historical, right, straight, it's right on the money. So we can go ahead, we can cover that, and anything else you'd like to cover. And Miss Braveheart may have some she might like to kick in there. So go ahead.
Well, great, of course. Well, I'm always honored, Gene, to be on the.
Oh, well, that's so
yes,
sweet
go ahead.
Of you. It's so very sweet of you to say that, Gene, and I'm going to mute my mic and let you do the talking, but I'll hang on for a while and maybe I'll have my 2 cents worth to add, but I don't have the background knowledge. I'm learning.
No.
I'm a student. I'm the student here.
No. In fact, I'm watching your game, hockey, on TV right now. I got the sound off.
You?
The Predators and the Detroit Red Wings are playing in Nashville tonight or this afternoon. So nothing with 18:31 to go in the second period. So
I'm
a great hockey fan.
Okay.
Now, didn't your son play hockey, Gene?
Yeah, he started out as a little guy and played for the Nashville Travel Teams, then played in high school, and then wound up playing for the University of Tennessee Ice Falls, played in college.
Yeah. And
he still plays in like a men's league.
Gee, I wonder where he got that athletic, that desire to get in athletics like that. I wonder where he got that and that talent.
He must have been from a great grandfather. Something he get it from me.
Well, I know this is inside, but also the bitter ender. I happen to know he was a superb athlete in college, besides your collegiate career, I'm not going to say the Olympics, but I know you tried out with the Cincinnati Bengals football team.
Yeah, had a tryout. When I came back to the States, I played for the Quantico Marines football team. And yes. At the end of that season, got a tryout with the Bengals at their rookie and free agent camp in Cincinnati. And, of course, didn't make it. But it was a good, it was a great experience. And the only reason I stayed as long as I did, they had a rookie quarterback there by the name of Kenny Anderson. And he was the one that took him to the first Super Bowl. And it was funny. I was at the end of the receiver's line, and he was at the back end of the quarterback's line. So we'd come up to the front together, him as the quarterback, me as receiver. And he had such a good touch on the ball. I mean, he could make a folding lawn chair look like a great receiver. And so that's probably why I stayed as long as I did. And I think the Bengal coaches figured it out after a while, said, no, we want to keep number 14 over there. Tell number 86 to bring his playbook and turn it in. So,
wow. Well,
that was my brief stint. But the good thing about it was then when I started coaching in high school, I wrote to Coach Paul Brown and asked him if it would be all right if I came up there to training camp. And he said, sure, I'd be glad for you to. And I'd known a lot of the coaches. Well, my position coach at Cincinnati when I was there was Bill Walsh, who later went on to the 49ers. He was a quarterback and receiver coach and just a super, super nice guy. And one of the summers I was up there at their training camp, taking a lot of notes. I mean, it's like a graduate course in football. And those coaches were so nice. You'd ask them a question after practice, and they were walking off the field. And they'd grab my notebook and say, well, now, against Cleveland, we do it this way. And when we play Pittsburgh, we do this. And when we play against the Giants, we did this right here. So, you know, I was just a little nothing high school coach, and they treated me like I was some big college coach or something. So great, great bunch. But anyway, I found out Bill Walsh was a great historian. And his area of interest was the war between the states. So he would get through with practice, and the morning practice, me walking off the field, and they invited me to eat in the cafeteria with the players and the coaches. And we'd be walking back, and he'd go, well, now, at Chancellorsville, if this had happened, and there was this, and we were discussing all this, and everybody else wants football autographs. So we had our military discussion coming off the field.
That's amazing. That's refreshing, too. You know, a lot of people – including probably me, you think football players, especially coaches, are just single-minded, narrow interest. That's all they think about. But, you know, when you said you didn't make it, I got to say one more thing. When you said you didn't make it, there's a certain other guy. See if I can remember his name. Seemed to me like it was a Tom Brady, something like that. It was drafted like what 199th next to the Larry last draftee.
He was
fourth, fifth string quarterback at New England.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it makes me wonder, Gene, if you could hunt, if they could have kept you around there. I never know. If you had that great of, and I know this is off topic, but he had that great coaching, the great minds. Those guys got to be smart. If they could have worked with you some more, I bet you I'd put my money on you to made it big.
Well, the thing was, if I'd have made it, about a year or so later, they got Isaac Curtis. And that would have been the end of my career, guys, all pro. So anyway, but it was a great experience. And like I said, the coaches were so nice to me when I went up there as a high school coach and answered any question I had. And I know the first time I was up there, I was standing over on the sidelines. I wasn't going to go out there where they're having a scrimmage. And Coach Brown came by and he said, come on out here and stand behind the huddle. You can't see anything over there. Come on out here. So, you know, that's the way it was. So I thought they were really super people.
Well, let me ask you one more question. I'm not to get you too far off, but because you didn't get me interested. I knew you as a coach. Two-part question. How did your professional experience, bleed over into your high school coaching experience? And how did you do it?
Organization, saw how they organized their practice, and there wasn't a wasted minute out there. They had a practice schedule. They're going to do 12 minutes on this. They're going to do 18 minutes on this. And, I mean, it just ran like clockwork. And I think, of course, Paul Brown was known for his organizational skills when he was back coach of the Cleveland Browns. And then the innovations he brought into the National Football League. and like the use of films and a lot of and scouting on the other teams and things like that, which you take for granted today, but it wasn't something that was everybody did. So I seeing their organization and how they set everything up and how they planned out a practice, I guess that was it.
That's what Bear Bryant said. Bear Bryant said you had to have a plan. He was the only one. Well, people, we'll go back, get back to the, maybe to the, I'm sorry, got the bitter ender off the track.
No, that's okay.
That really hit my interest. Be right back, folks.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
A Venus is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for hanging on. We've had a fantastic show. I hope I... Even if I did get us off track a little bit, we were talking about during the break, the Bitter Ender and Miss Braveheart. Gene, one of our precious staff member, co-host, brother, you know, we're talking about how he's been through sports all of his life. He had a tryout for the Cincinnati Bengals. We were talking about how sports, and I would say especially football and probably track, because I tell you what, if you ain't never run a half marathon or a marathon, you don't know what tough is. But especially football, when you get a snot knocker, that first time you get that snot knocker, don't put it on your buddy.
De-cleater knocks you out of your cleats.
I'm telling you what. But it's life. All it is freaking life. And you know what? As Gene was telling me about this, I'm thinking, he's talking about how football has broken down. You have to pander to these blacks, you know, or you can't have a team that this discipline has gone to help. That's in all of life. Football, what's happening in football is what's happening in life, in our society. Yep. It's a total breakdown. But we could apply those, before I go too long, the lessons you teach those kids in high school when you were a high school coach, Gene, I'm sure to stay with them for life. And that's what you can see it right now. That's what these people don't get. You know, you could probably never get it to these humanoids in public schools.
Well, take a little bit away from our Confederate History Month, one more thing. This is about 4 or 5 years ago, I think now. My daughter said that their liver transplant department over at Vanderbilt was having a dinner for the staff and the department over at one of the country clubs. And she wanted to know if I'd be available. And I said, well, Katie, I'm marking that down right now. I'll be available if I'm got to go pick up $1 million. I'm going to wherever you're going to. So we went over there at one of the country clubs in Nashville, And I asked the lady at the front desk, where's the Vanderbilt dinner going to be tonight? And she said, oh, right back down that hallway. Well, it's kind of weird. The door was shut to this big room. And, you know, usually they have a door open and they have a cash bar. And my daughter sort of stopped and let me go in first, and I did. And I just noticed everybody was standing around. I mean, nobody was drinking. Nobody was talking. You know, it's like almost like they were at a funeral wake or something. And then all of a sudden, I started recognizing the faces. And it was our former football players from when I coached in high school. Oh. And they had gotten a reunion together and invited all the coaches to come to the reunion. And it was just one of the greatest nights ever. I mean, to see all those kids again that had grown up and hear all of their stories. And the thing about it was, though, I've kept up with a lot of them, and some of them have been such successful businessmen in the Nashville area and, well, actually all over the country. I mean, there's some of those guys that I made them run extra sprints or something. They could buy my house and sell it two or three times over. You know, I mean, they would hire me to do their lawn work for them. That's about all I'd be qualified to do where they are today. But, and a lot of them got up and said it was what they went through and learned in football, yes, in preseason camp, and hanging in there those first 3 years when we were an expansion team. The first varsity season we had, we didn't have a senior class. And we had about five or six juniors, only probably two of them were real football players. So it's basically a freshman and sophomore team playing against all these senior high school teams. And they hung in there. They didn't quit. And they took some bad beatings, but they didn't give up. So, you know, I think that was something they learned that they got from that. So, anyway, kind of off our history subject, but yes, it was an interesting experience.
That's amazing. But I like people to know, and I don't like to say I just use a pronoun, but people, it's good that people know what kind of people we got on this program, what kind of character we have. That's for sure. But I promise this will be the last football comment. What you just described, when you were an expansion team with that high school, pretty much what says the same thing that Bear Bryant said his first year at Texas A&M. I think his first year there, where they won two or three games. And those guys went through hell.
Well, the thing was, people asked me, well, what kind of first season did you have? Well, 1-9. You won 9 games? No. O-N-E-N-I-N-E. One win, 9 losses.
Yes. That was Bear Bryant. So, yep.
Yeah. But they hung in there and won the last game of the season. And the thing was, if it couldn't get any worse, it did. They didn't get our stadium ready. We didn't have our lights for the first two games. So we had to play our first two home games on the road. And the other schools were nice. They took out expenses, and then they split the gate with us. So we played 7 road games that year.
Damn.
And only 3 home games. And we were homecoming for 6 out of those 7 games that we played on the road. They knew we were coming. But the last game of the season, we beat a team up in Clarksville, played on at the stadium there at Austin Peay University on the AstroTurf. So we did win our last game of the season and wrecked their homecoming that they had. So anyway, that was a fun bus ride from Clarksville back down to Nashville that night. So anyway,
Fort Campbell.
Yeah. So anyhow, that was my
Gene,
so-called experience in football. Yes, ma'am, Monica.
Wonderful to hear these stories, because I didn't know any of this about you. And
I just want
to say you're a very humble man, you know, and I appreciate that about you. So wonderful to hear these stories. Thank you.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you, and I'll tell our listeners, after the tryout with the Bengals, I wound up playing in a couple of minor league teams that year for the Norfolk Neptunes in the Atlantic Coast Football League. That league folded at the end of the season, and then I wound up playing for the Webster Grove Suns in the Midwest Semi-Pro League. That league folded about halfway through the season. So I decided I probably ought to get in something that was a little more practical. But I was single. I was pretty much living out of my car. I didn't care. But The thing is, if any of our listeners have memorabilia from the Norfolk Neptunes or the Webster Groves Sons, I'll be glad to sign it for them so we can do that.
I'm a big pro football. Hey, we got a pro football star. We're the only radio station around here that's got a pro football star on here, man.
No, underline the word semi-pro.
Well, you know how it is in the news business. We always exaggerate stuff. He was all pro.
Yeah,
right. Well, that's amazing. I mean, I know we may have got off, but you know what? That is so refreshing to hear this. And our people need to know. Like, Miss Monica never knew. See, I never knew the whole story. I knew you tried out for the Cincinnati Bengals, but we're not just one. We're just not cookie-cutter people in this program. We have families. We have past lives. Hopefully we have future lives. We're some amazing people here, and they need to know that, Bitter Ender.
Well, it was a good experience. And like I said, I've always been very complimentary of the Bengals to let me come up there and talk to them and got a lot of things. Like, how do you call plays with all these different formations and motion and all of that and not get penalized for taking too much time? Well, they explained how they did. They had a code words, what they used. And different colors mean different things. And so if you hear it on TV and the quarterback's calling out a color and numbers, that they're probably changing the play right at the line of scrimmage. And then different words meant a flanker in motion from the outside in or a flanker in motion all the way across the formation. And so they told me all their codes, and I was talking to the fellow that was there then, Lindy Infante, was the offensive coordinator. This was several years after Bill Walsh left and went to the 49ers. And I was saying, I don't want you to give up any of your secrets or anything. He said, no. No problem. So we got all this stuff from the Giants. So anyway, they were stealing from the New York Giants, and they were passing it on to somebody else. So he didn't care.
That's incredible. I'm telling you. That's amazing. So, see, I never knew all that about you. I really didn't. I didn't know. I was going to ask you one more question, but I got myself confused. This is I've enjoying the hell out of this.
I hope our listeners enjoy some of the funny stuff that happened. So anyway, it was a good experience, and it was a good experience being with those young men that were coaching, and see them come out as for the team as freshmen, and they can barely tie their shoes. And then see the progress they make up through the years to where they're starting as juniors or seniors. And, well, we had a boy, had a couple of players that went on to college, and one of the boys that was our punter, Brian Shulman, walked on at Auburn and made it as a punter at Auburn and wound up as all SEC down there. And so great to see somebody like that and the determination and hard work that he exhibited. And well, a lot of them, they were all hard. They worked hard. And that was one thing we just said, you can't go out and change what the other team's going to do. But you can change how hard you work, and you can change how hard you execute or how much time you spend on execution of plays and defensive schemes. That you have an advantage over. You can control that. You can't control what the other team's going to do. Can't control the weather. So you can control the things that you can control. Bear down on that. So anyway, that's what we did.
Before we go to break, everything you've told these people about football applies 100% to life, and applies especially 100% to the Blood River Radio family, Blood River Radio audience, because you know what? All these tools that you've gone over, hard work, toughness, determination, dedication, that if we make it, if the white race makes it, Bitter Ender, in Braveheart, if we make it, we're going to have to draw upon the same attributes that the Bitter Ender just got through telling you about, what takes you to get through, not necessarily just a pro football player, but to last as a freshman. If you ain't been in Tennessee in August in 2 days, you don't know what heat is. So, people, you need to absorb these lessons and apply it to life and apply it to your survival. Be right back, folks.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Laura Winters. Former President Trump taking his social media platform Truth Social public next week, and he stands to make a lot of money, USA's John Schaefer reports.
The social media company founded by former President Trump is set to become publicly traded through a merger. Shareholders of Digital World Acquisition Corporation granted approval on Friday for the merger with Trump Media and Technology Group, the owner of the Truth Social platform. Trump's ownership in the new company valued at around $3 billion. I'm John Schaefer.
Meanwhile, Trump facing a Monday deadline to come up with almost $500 million in order to appeal his civil fraud judgment. New York Attorney General Democrat Letitia James is preparing to seize some of Trump's Westchester County, New York properties, including one of Trump's golf courses. USA's Dave Collins with more.
Trump faces a Monday deadline to pay his $464 million bond in a civil fraud case. Records show that James has formally registered judgments against Trump, the Trump Organization, and his two older sons in Westchester County, which signals Trump National Golf Club and the Seven Springs Estate may be at risk of being seized. Trump's lawyers say they can't find an underwriter willing to take on the entire amount.
Well wishes coming in from around the world as news breaks that Princess Kate being treated for cancer. The British monarch delivering an address Friday about how she and her family are coping and asked the public for time, space, and privacy while she is receiving chemotherapy. The princess, who is only 42 years old, describing in a video recording how she and her family are dealing with the devastating diagnosis.
This, of course, came as a huge shock. And William and I have been doing everything we can to process and manage this privately for the sake of our young family.
And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
Omaha Steaks is rewriting the book on burgers with an all-new handmade texture for the juiciest home-style burgers you've ever tasted. Their pure ground burgers are made from single cuts of real aged Omaha steaks. These are truly steaks on a bun. Filet mignon, ribeye, New York strip, sirloin, and even brisket burgers. Now is the time to experience the exclusive burger perfection flight for just $79.99. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code TREAT at checkout to get an extra $20 off your order, plus free shipping. You'll get four of each pure ground burger so you can sample all the steak on a bun greatness. These burgers are crafted for a juicier, more tender experience, making your mouth water with every single bite. Don't wait. Go to omahasteaks.com. Use promo code TREAT at checkout and get $20 off the burger perfection flight and discover your new burger obsession. Minimum order may be required.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death, like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Dear Blood River Radio family, I sure hope you are enjoying this. It's kind of a little change of a pace, the third hour, but you know what? Like we said, not to run it in the ground, repeat myself too much, but what we talked about in the first hour with Gene, talking about high school football, freshman football, pro football, everything that they learned to be, even if you're not successful. And you know what? Success is really can mean different things. So these, for instance, these freshman kids that Gene talked about, when he was freshman in high school, that stuck it out when they were getting their head beat off by seniors. There's a big difference in size and strength between freshmen and seniors. They hung it through these blazing hot summers in Tennessee doing those two-a-days. And, man, that was hell, I'm telling you. And they did it, and they succeeded, and they laid out all the virtues in life that let them succeed. The Bitter Ender said he's got several people that he coached that have just and they made extremely successful in business. All those things, those same attributes are what's, if those, that's what's going to pull us through if we can survive this global white genocide against us. Go ahead, Bitter Ender.
Well, I had one more football story, and then I'll be quiet, and we'll get back to our history. And I did want to make a compliment to Monica about Canada before she has to leave. But we had one of our parents, Bob Patton, had coached at Vanderbilt, and he coached at Clemson and a couple other schools. I think he'd been an assistant coach with the New York Giants in the pros, but he had a boy playing for us. And got a couple, great philosopher. I know we were walking off a field one night, and we just barely won. And I'm going, oh, golly, we did this, we did that, we were lucky to do this. Lucky to that. And boy, who we were playing next week, they'll eat us alive. And I'm going on about that. And he said, hey, listen. He said, winning a football game is like landing an airplane. If you can walk away from the landing, it's a good landing. So take it any way you can get it. And then I don't know how it came up, but he said, always hire assistant coaches that are smarter than you are. And I said, well, that won't be hard. We get a homeless guy from a cardboard box underneath the Woodland Street Bridge, and he'd be smarter than I am. And he said, no. He said, too many head coaches have too big an ego, and they don't want somebody that's going to outshine them. But if you get really, really good assistant coaches, they'll make you look good. And that's exactly what we had at that high school where I was coaching. We had a fellow, George Weicker, that was a defensive coordinator, and he controlled the defense. He did everything on that. And Ed Zaborowski coached our specialty teams, and John Hudson and Jerry Link and David Tucker and Damon Regan and all these guys that were assistant coaches. Once we've gotten our coaches meetings before the season, decided who was coaching what, or do you want to do the same thing you did last year, then they controlled it. And if something happened, you know, they would get it straightened out for the for the offensive lineman, or they'd get it straightened out with the defense, or they'd get it straightened out with the specialty teams. And so there wasn't any, it was delegation, and they knew that they were responsible for their particular area, and I wasn't going to always be looking over their shoulder and saying, well, I wouldn't have done it that way, this way, Once they were in charge of that specialty, that was it. They were in charge of it. And I wasn't going to interrupt them or mess with them during a game or anything like that. Now, we may go back coaches' meetings when we're watching films and say, well, you know, maybe next week we might try something else. But under pressure, they were in charge. And I think that's what you have to do in organization of a business or the military or whatever it is. Once you put people in a specific area and you see that they can handle it, then stay out of their way and let them run the show. That's pretty much, I think, could be successful anywhere.
Yeah, that's great. Gene, like I say, you are a very humble man. That's very nice. I like that very much. My father was also a very, very humble man, and it's something that we I would like to see more of in our society.
It's too much now. Everybody wants a spotlight on them. And Monica and I were talking during the break. My wife and I took our honeymoon. We drove up to Winnipeg in Canada and went out the Trans-Canadian Highway. We went to the all the different places and sites, and we'd camp out for two or three nights. But at that third or fourth night, we had to get a motel and cheated. We cheated. We get a motel and get a shower and get inside. But went out to got to see Banff and Lake Louise and through Calgary, and we were going to go to Vancouver. But our car broke down in Calgary and had to spend most of our money getting it fixed. But we did drive across the provincial border there between Alberta and British Columbia and had dinner at Golden, British Columbia, and then turned around and came back. So at least say we went to British Columbia. We got that far, about 10 or 15 miles across the provincial border there. So, but it was great. And just nice. I've always admired the Canadians. They've been just super great people. Every time I've been up there to see our friends in John Marshall in Toronto or Dexter Nelson up there in Alberta, and just really, really great people. And I'm sorry for the, well, like we have, the Liberal government that's been imposed on y'all. And
oh my goodness, we've gone so far. Yeah, we've gone down the communist hole, and it was, you know, the father of the current prime minister, well, the pretend father anyway. Many people think that Pierre Elliott Trudeau is not the actual biological father of Justin Trudeau. Perhaps that is correct. But Pierre Trudeau, you know, he was the prime minister for many years during my formative years, 16 years in total, I do believe. And I never knew until much more recently that he was actually the biggest communist around. He led the communist delegation of Canada to all kinds of, you know, communist meetings in different parts of the world. The mainstream media never told us that. Why do you think that? Yeah, why didn't the mainstream media or school or anybody tell us that he was actually a communist, an active communist? He was working with communists from all over the world, but no, he was, you know, such a cool guy that the mainstream media portrayed him as a really, you know, really cool guy. They would highlight little things that he would do, like pirouette behind the queen and this and that, you know, make him be like, what a neat guy. Wow, we really love that guy.
I thought it was only the American media that would cover things up and lie about it. I didn't know Canadian media would do the same thing.
Surprise.
I didn't know it covered that. Y'all, I found that quote.
And see, that's the thing I couldn't understand, because the people I knew in Toronto and out in Alberta and all around, they're very, very conservative. And how could a country with people like that elect these liberal knuckleheads to run their country or send them to parliament or whatever? But, you know, it happens here. You know,
I think it goes right back to the media. It really does, because the media is instrumental in shaping our perceptions. It's all about perceptions, what we think is real and true and whatnot. And the media, and who owns the media? Should we spell it out for people who owns the media? You know, the one of those flyers from GTV flyers says, you know, everything about the media is Jewish, or whatever they say at the top of those flyers. You know, every aspect, that's it, every aspect of the media is Jewish. Like, you look at the CEOs of all the mainstream media.
Absolutely.
They're all Jewish. Yeah, so I guess they're...
It's their implementation of the long march through the institutions to take over department heads in colleges and infiltrate the colleges and teach nothing but communist propaganda, to take over the media, to take over the banking system, control the money, control the big businesses, and take over the entertainment industry.
And in the universities, we had a little story earlier this in the first hour about the universities, how the professors were being paid kickback money if they would put the DIE, or the, you know, diversity, inclusion, and equity. And I reversed the order on purpose there to spell the word die. But, you know, they would get extra money, bonuses, if they could incorporate that DIE agenda into their curriculum, no matter if they were an engineering professor or whatever kind of professor, didn't matter. Can you imagine that, Gene?
Oh, gosh. Yes, I can imagine that. I'm not shocked at anything anymore. I'm disgusted with it, but I'm not really shocked at much of anything anymore, the way things, especially this country's gone down the drain. So, I could see that coming. And you know, referring back to me coaching in high school and teaching history there, I wouldn't last till lunchtime the first day if I were teaching now. They would have fired me. You know, and then they'd have all the protests. Not only would I have been fired, I'd have Maybe to fight my way through a bunch of protesters to get out of there and get to the parking lot and get my truck and get out of there.
So, they'd be protesting you, Bitterender.
Yeah. So anyway, as long as I get to my truck, I always have Mr. Smith and Wesson riding around with me. So
that's a mighty good friend. That's a mighty good
shoot
friend.
Shoot my way out if I had to. Okay.
Right.
We'll get back to history in the last segment.
Sure. Be right back, folks.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
This is Attorney Jason Ruff, General Counsel of the Knights Party based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Dear Blood River Radio students, I hope you hadn't walked out of class thinking you wasted your tuition money, but I promise you we're going to get right back to this. Please send your tuition money back. I promise you. People, we're going right back to the instructor himself, Professor Gene the Bitter Ender. Go ahead, Professor.
Well, we got a little bit sidetracked, but I hope our listening audience enjoyed some of the stories that we told today and life experiences and how athletics can strengthen you for whatever your job is, your life, your family life, and dedication and how it applies and carries over from athletics to your private life, your business life, your community life, and everything like that, and get a lot out of it. But we will get back to our history. You know, last week we were talking about some of the Confederate events that took place in March. We were talking about the first battle of the ironclad ships, the Confederate ironclad, the CSS Virginia, went out and destroyed three Yankee frigates. They were the battleships of their day. In fact, that battle in the Chesapeake Bay there, Hampton Roads, right off of Norfolk, that was the worst defeat that the United States Navy had suffered from 1775 up until then, and it was still the worst defeat that the United States Navy had suffered up until December 7th, 1941. Yes. That was the only defeat that was worse than the ones that the Confederates inflicted on them there. We had talked about the birthday of a famous Confederate general that was born in March, on March the 16th, Irish-born General Patrick Cleburne. And what a brilliant officer he was, and what he did training his troops. And the same thing we were talking about, of looking out for his men, taking care of his men. They loved him, respected him. And he took care of them and took off for all his enlisted men. And, of course, then he was killed there on the battlefield at Franklin, just south of where we live today, on the charge made against the Federal Works at Franklin on November the 30th, 1864. So we've got a couple of other things that took place in March, and I would like to go back and give some historical facts on my hero, Tennessee hero, Nathan Bedford Forrest. And he fought two battles in Middle Tennessee in March of 1863. The first one was down at a little place called Thompson Station, south of Nashville. And the Federal Army held Nashville and had fallen to the Federals in February of 1862. And General Rosecrans was sending out these Federal patrols, or, you know, units out to try to find out where the Confederates were and where there were any weak points. And they were coming down what is today Highway 31, runs south out of Nashville through Franklin, through Spring Hill, and then to this little town called Thompson Station, which is just a few buildings around a railroad station there. So on March 5th, Forrest's cavalry was coming north while the U.S. Army was coming south, and they ran into a column, and they knew the Federals were coming, and they laid a trap for them. This column under Colonel John Coburn was hit by part of Forrest's command under Red Jackson, William Hicks Red Jackson, in a frontal attack. And then Forrest swung around, as he always did, around the flank of the Federal Army and caught him in the flank and the rear. And they blocked the road, and they captured the entire wagon train. And the Federals had about 30 killed, about 177 wounded, and then they captured almost 1,000 of them. And two interesting things that happened in that battle. One was General Forrest's horse, Roderick, that was one of his favorite horses, got wounded early in the battle. And he dismounted, gave him to an aide to take to the rear, and got another horse. So the wound that this horse had wasn't fatal, but he wanted him taken care of and stopped the bleeding. They took the horse back to the rear. The horse heard the bugle for the charge, and he took off running and trying to catch up with him, and got hit two more times and went down and died on the field there at Thompson Station. God. And is buried there, and they have a small statue of a horse in a gazebo. It's on private property, but it's right off of Highway 31 there, and that's where Roderick is buried. And unfortunately, I've heard their housing developments coming in there, and I'm sure they're going to run a bulldozer over that. Say, oh, well, we didn't see it. We didn't know what it was. And like they've destroyed so much of our history. But the other interesting thing that happened, there's a big house there, two-story brick house that was there during the war and during the battle. And the fighting was going on all around that house. And, I mean, bullets were hitting the bricks and ricocheting off. And this young girl, Alice Thompson, 17 years old, she runs out in the yard. And at this early phase of the battle, the Confederates were being driven off the field. That was before Forrest launched his attack. She grabs a Confederate flag that one of the color bearers had dropped, and she picks it up and starts waving it out in this front yard and rallies the troops. And they make a stand and hold the line, and then that enabled Forrest to swing around behind them and cut off the road and everything. And some of the soldiers said that was the bravest thing they'd ever seen in the whole war, is seeing that young lady out there waving that flag. Then the second battle he fought, and that was a little in the same month, March of 63. This is on the 25th of March. This is closer to Nashville. It was a little town railroad stop called Brentwood. And now the Nashville and urban sprawl has just moved out and covered up Brentwood. It looks like it's a part of Nashville. But at 7 a.m., his men came in behind the town there and cut the telegraph lines and tore up the tracks to Nashville. So they couldn't send any reinforcements out of Nashville. And they went after a big fort that was built up on top of a hill there, and there used to be a historical marker there, but it's been taken down by the state of Tennessee, and they claim they're refurbishing it, but I don't know that it takes about 6 months to refurbish and repaint the sign. But anyway, we'll see what happens. So he was working with Colonel Starnes, one of his commanders, and they had this place surrounded, and they finally surrendered. And then he sent his artillery down about 5 or 10 miles south of there to take out a fort that was built at a bridge, a railroad bridge, over the Harpeth River. And so they sent in a demand for surrender there, and the people, the federal soldiers that were manning that fort, refused to surrender. So they unlimbered one of their artillery pieces and fired a shot that went ripping right through the wooden walls of this fort and one of the barracks and out the other side. And the Confederates said, "You've never seen so many white handkerchiefs and flags flying out of a building in your life." And they got that. So they burned the railroad bridge and then took their prisoners from there in a wagon train and got out of there. Then one other thing that happened in March, we moved forward to March 1st, 1864. And by this time, Forrest had been transferred west to the Department of Mississippi, Alabama, and Eastern Louisiana, and took over the cavalry there in two divisions under James Chalmers and Abraham Buford. And they had decided they were going to launch a raid into West Tennessee and into Western Kentucky to get horses, because Buford's cavalry division was dismounted. So basically they were just infantry. They weren't cavalry. So Forrest and Chalmers headed out ahead of them and went up into West Tennessee to Jackson. And the thing was, he scouted this area out before they ever left Columbus, Mississippi. He knew exactly where the Federals were, where the strong points were, where the bridges were, where the fords were across the river. He didn't leave anything to chance. He knew exactly where he was going. So the point being on all of this, this was the raid where they captured Fort Pillow on the Mississippi River, and where Forrest was accused of the massacre of the poor Negro troops at Fort Pillow, which is a lie. And in April, when that battle was fought on April the 12th, we'll explain what actually happened at Fort Pillow. But when they left Columbus, Mississippi, heading north, Fort Pillow wasn't mentioned. It was not in their operational orders. They were going after horses. And they went through West Tennessee. They captured Union City. And he sent Colonel Duckworth and Colonel Faulkner to capture the federal garrison at Union City. And they demanded the surrender and said Forrest was out there, and they thought Forrest was actually there. They just bluffed him into surrendering. Colonel Faulkner had a rather interesting grandson. His name was William Faulkner. And
wow.
Yes, and as I understand it, he was a rather famous writer and author. So, well, William Forrest's grandfather was part of Forrest's cavalry. And then they headed on up into Kentucky to Mayfield and then all the way up to Paducah. And Paducah was guarded with a fort and a gunboat. They didn't get all that many horses there. And they left and pulled back down towards Mayfield. And the Yankee commander there bragged in the newspaper that he had defeated Forrest. And you know, Forrest was just a braggart, and he was it was a bluff, and he was greatly overrated. Boy, he whipped Forrest's men and drove them away. They never even got close to all the horses that were in the warehouse on River Road. And I guess he assumed the Confederates couldn't read the newspaper, because the next night they went back and got all the horses out of the warehouse on River Road and said, "Thanks for putting that in the newspaper for us. We didn't know where they were." So anyway, so that by the 4th, they're back down to Trenton, Tennessee, and they've gotten horses. Buford's men came back from Kentucky, and they're getting ready to pull out of Tennessee and head back to Mississippi. And Forrest sent a preliminary order to his commanding officer in Mississippi, Stephen D. Lee, told him how many prisoners they'd captured, how many miles of railroad track they'd torn up, how many horses they'd captured, a number of arms, ammunition, and everything. Fort Pillow still was not mentioned. So they'd been on this raid for 5 weeks, and Fort Pillow wasn't mentioned. On April the 6th, he sent a supplementary order and said, "We will attend to Fort Pillow." And then the reason was the civilians in West Tennessee asked him to do something about this Yankee fort over on the Mississippi River, which is about 60 miles out of their way if they were going over there. And the Yankee soldiers, black and white, were coming out of the fort and robbing the civilians, attacking the women. They were murdering Confederate prisoners of war that they caught in West Tennessee. And next week we'll tell you exactly what happened and the Yankee propaganda.
We're going to go out and get some more of them horses next week, Gene.
Yes, sir. We'll get them all this time.
We sure will. We'll look out for that newspaper clipping that tells us where they are. Well, people, dear Blood River Radio family, Gene, the bitter ender, Miss Monica Braveheart, Miss Nancy, the bell cow, and Miss Annie Elizabeth. Thank you all so much for coming out and helping and making this show go. Thank you, Miss Lizzie. Thank you, Blood River Radio family. We do it for you. We love you so much, and hope you have a wonderful night tonight. And we're same time, same place next week. God willing, we'll see you. It'll be the last Saturday in March. Good night, everybody.